Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Recovery Cast. Ron and Dave here, as usual. Find us on the web at myrecoverycast.com, and please share that link and spread the word about the podcast. Today, we have something pretty special, something I know will be close to home for a lot of our listeners. It's close to home for me, too, but maybe in just a little different way. This is a story that takes place here in my home fellowship in New Mexico. It's many stories, really, and all of them are about grit, perseverance, and the importance of relationships. One story is about how H&I work is so much more than showing up at an institution one day to share a message with those who don't have access to it out in the community. It's also about the long journey of establishing and maintaining relationships with the professionals who work in or run those prisons, about demonstrating consistency and commitment over a long period of time, and about the importance of those friends of NA who open the doors and let us do our work. For that part of the story, we interviewed Jimmy H., who combines the best of PR and H&I, along with so many others, to do that work here in New Mexico. It's also a story about finding some hope in the darkest of circumstances, about those who choose to stay clean and carry a message while incarcerated. For that story, we'll hear the recorded shares of addicts who are currently locked up, and some who have been released and are still clean some years later. And it's a story about a convention that is blessed each year by a group of incarcerated addicts who are allowed to come out in prison orange, covered partially by a convention t-shirt, and mix with us on the Saturday of our convention. A highlight each year is the meeting where those addicts become speakers and share to a packed banquet room some of the most powerful messages we get to hear all weekend. For the next hour, we'll give you those stories. To that steady army of volunteers all over the world, showing up at those places to pass along that flame of hope week in and week out, and to those inside who know about finding a greater freedom through this program, regardless of your circumstances, this one's for you. Dave starts out the dialogue with Jimmy.
All right, thanks, Ron. Jimmy, how are you? I'm Dave.
Dave, I'm well, thank you.
Good. I'm just outside of Philadelphia. I actually met you when I was in at the Rio Grande Convention 2 years ago, and you brought a crew in from the prison, and it was the first time I had seen anything like that. And since then, Ron has filled me in a little bit about your efforts there and your commitment to taking the message of hope to incarcerated individuals.
My name's Chris. I'm an addict. I came out here from Kansas City, and I met Jimmy behind the walls. He came in every Wednesday and carried the message of Narcotics Anonymous, and for that, Jimmy, I love you. I'll always be grateful. Jimmy said I was the first guy I'd ever called him in 25 years, and he told me, he picked me up, and about a year later, he told me if I would have told him, he would have took me to Dillard's and bought me anything I wanted, but I didn't know it at that time. I got 1 minute, Jimmy told me, and I got a buddy out here that's known me for 25 years, watched me go in and out of these rooms, and he was so grateful that I got 1 minute to speak. And we drove down from Denver, and, you know, I do H&I with Lansing Prison, and I had about 90 days, and I stayed up all night thinking about what am I going to share with these guys. I was going in the medium. And I'm like, what am I going to share, man? I got to go in there and carry some hope, strength, experience, and share my message. You know, it was really my mess. And I went in there, and they were like, "Well, what's your clean day?" And I said, you know, I don't know. My clean day is June 8, 2013. And they were like, okay. And I had like 90 days, and they're all saying they got 20 years, 30 years, and so they just said, we're going to skip over you, and they carried a message of hope, strength, and experience to me in the penitentiary. And, you know, it was such a nice thing because, you know, I'm walking out of there and they're looking at me and they're saying, keep coming back, Chris, keep coming back. And what I realized, you know, was that uh, The lessons of my bottoms are no longer the teachers that I seek in recovery today. And I love Albuquerque because all of you guys through my trials and tribulations when I came out of prison kept telling me you love me and got me out of hotels when I'd relapse and told me to keep coming back. And I'm coming on 2 years and I'm so blessed and grateful to be here with you guys. So love you. Thanks.
But I always like to start off with, you know, how did you come upon the message of Narcotics Anonymous?
Well, Dave, I got the message of Narcotics Anonymous through a penal system. I got here, you know, court ordered, and I wasn't real happy about that, and I wasn't real happy about getting clean. But somehow the magic began, and I did have an honest desire to get clean. So you guys planted a seed in me and kept fanning that little spark of seed till I was able to stay clean a little while.
Yeah. When was that? What year?
Yeah, that was in 1985.
And was it you were court ordered to attend meetings?
Yeah, I was. And actually, it was a stipulation of my probation. I got here with a 5-year tail and two felony convictions, and the stipulation was either to get clean or go to the penitentiary. And neither one of them sounded very attractive to me, but I took the get clean route. And after my very first meeting, actually on my second NA meeting, is when the magic began. Something inside me woke up, and I knew you guys were onto something. And I just didn't know, I wasn't sure I could get it. But I have one clean date, and that was October the 7th, 1985, and that was a damn good day, Dave.
Oh, that's great, man. That's fantastic. So how did you get involved in service?
Well, when I got to Narcotics Anonymous, there was a group of people scooped me up, and they happened to be involved with this committee called H&I. And so they started wagging me around from the very beginning to Denny's after the meeting and this and that. And then they said, you know what, we think you need to go out to the prison with us. Well, I had about 14 days clean, and they didn't let me share in the beginning, but they started taking me out there to an H&I meeting, to a Federal Correctional Institute in Fort Worth, Texas, FCI. And that's how I got started. I got started hanging around doing what they did. And then I had about 90 days clean. And the H&I chair, my best friend, Debbie, said, Jimmy, I think tonight you need to tell your story. And Dave, who knows what I shared at 90 days clean, but I told my story for the first time in a penitentiary at 90 days clean. And I've been doing it ever since.
I don't want to gloss over this. So you got clean in Fort Worth, Texas.
I did.
Now,
Fort Worth, Texas. Uh-huh.
As you probably know, one of the earliest Addicts Anonymous meetings were held back in the 40s at Fort Worth.
Was that at that when it was a treatment center there at
yes.
the FCI?
Yes.
It was one of the original treatment centers. And yes, I was not aware that the meetings were started back then, but I knew it was one of that there in Lexington. Were two of the original treatment centers for drug addicts. And I knew that.
So this is that same facility that you went into?
It is the exact same facility. It has morphed a couple of times since that day.
Yeah.
But that's it.
Just to be clear, 14 days you're in a treatment center observing the carrying of the message to the incarcerated.
Correct. They wagged me in there pretty young. And, of course, we didn't have all the guidelines we have now. And it was left up to the chairperson's discretion. And she took a liking to me, and they were wagging me in there. We didn't need any kind of clearance process back then. It was just whoever Debbie brought in was okay. And since then, of course, everything's changed. But back then, yeah, I went in there. And, of course, I just listened for a while, like I said, until that day. She said, I think you need to tell your story.
So I guess at 90 days, you tell your story for the first time, that kind of lights a fire.
It lit a fire that I can't even describe. That, and if I, you know, I get emotional when I think back about this little addict that's just wanted to find a way out and found a way out and was so excited about being clean. Ron, my pants were on fire. I was like, guys, there's a better way. Guys, I found a way out. Guys, we've got in touch with something that can keep you from coming back here. And I've been telling that story ever since, you know. I found a way out. I found a solution.
So that's 30 years ago. So you get involved in H&I. You're never not involved in H&I. And when I kind of remember when you moved here to Albuquerque, you were, got involved in H&I and saw some needs to light a fire under some asses or whatever and get some people involved in H&I at another level. I mean, we've always had a strong H&I here, but it goes through stages, and I think when you hit it, you begin to really work with it, right? And so you end up with a meeting in a facility in a prison in Los Lunas, New Mexico. Can you just talk about that a little bit, about how that got going?
Well, what happened, Ron, is initially when I moved to Albuquerque, New Mexico, I was immediately busy with my education. And as soon as I got done with my college degree, I got a phone call from a gentleman named Jesse, and he said, Jimmy, we need an NA meeting at the Los Lunas prison. Would you be willing to help me? What he was really saying was, Jimmy, would you be willing to do it? Because he hooked me up with you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And his timing was impeccable. It was perfect. I'm through college. I'm starting back to meetings. I'm getting involved with the fellowship at a level that I hadn't been before because of my college, pursuing a college education at that time. So Jesse called me and I said, yeah, let's go out there and talk with these guys. And we did. And we decided that we would start an NA meeting at the Level 2 Central New Mexico Penitentiary. Now, Jesse didn't stick around very long. And so then it kind of threw it back on my shoulders. And at that point, I knew what to do. I just started talking to my buddies. We didn't have to have clearance the way we did now. And they would let us bring guest speakers in. So I was busy getting guest speakers to come tell their story at this prison. And they were so excited because Albuquerque had actually had a presence at that prison years ago. And then it had kind of fallen to the wayside. And so now Jesse was initiating that, and he was using me, the perfect guy to do that. And it was a perfect setup for all of us. And I fell in love. The prison fell in love with us and Narcotics Anonymous. And then we began taking meetings in on a regular basis every Wednesday night at 7 o'clock, rain or shine. We were there, and we had quite a few gentlemen that were NA volunteers that were working with me at the time. It was pretty exciting, Ron. It really was, and it just fell in place.
Has the administration of that place ever changed over during that time?
It was pretty solid for quite a few years. Probably for 5 or 6 years, it was very solid. And I had a rapport with the administration and the counselors, and then it began to move. It began to shift. Our head counselor left and went to Santa Fe. It kept changing. And the thing that didn't change was the head of addiction services for the state of New Mexico, a gentleman named Charles King. Oh, and he was there, and him and I developed a bond and a friendship and a rapport that lasted for the next 5 or 6 years. I don't know, quite a while. But it has changed a lot, and it continues to change, Ron. Even as we speak, it's a moving target. The system is in place, but the faces and the names are different.
So does that require a certain kind of work on your part to reestablish things that you had thought were long since established?
It happened 2 years ago, last year before the convention. Let me back up. We had a rapport that was solid for 8 years. And then all the personnel left. And then last year, before the convention, 6 months before the convention of last year, we had to reinitiate it. And so I couldn't get anybody to, none of the people that we knew were there to respond. So I made a phone call just to the counselor's desk. And to answer your question, yes, I had to regenerate this. So I called out there to say, hey, here's who I am. Here's what we want to do. Who do I need to talk to? Serendipity, the lady who answered was in charge of behavioral health. And she said, I can help you with that. And so I didn't know her. She didn't know me. And we begun this rapport on the telephone, emails, right? I had to write a letter stating what I wanted. And now she made it happen. And she was wonderful. She said, I can make that happen. She says, we were wondering where you guys were. And I said, well, here we are. We want you back. And this lady actually came to our convention last year, and she saw the Narcotics Anonymous convention, and she saw the behind the walls meeting, and she was quite impressed. She had no idea that we were that organized, and she was quite impressed. And so she's been very instrumental again this year, Ron, to make it happen for the inmates to come out again.
All right, and I'm going to ask you to tell that story in a second. Charles King was also somebody who started coming to our conventions. The strength of those relationships, the feeling he had about NA had him coming to our conventions. And I remember the last time I saw him there, I think he was pulling around an oxygen tank. He wasn't doing well, but it was a priority in his life to come to the NA convention. What a great friend of NA he was.
He's been a total supporter, and he opened doors for us. And when we get around to the story of how it all happened, Charles made it happen. He's the one that had initiated the very first inmate to ever come to a convention in New Mexico.
All right. Well, what we're talking about there is that it's become part of our convention now to have inmates come in to our convention, and they mix with our members during the day on Saturday, and then they speak at a meeting that evening or that afternoon. And so can you just tell us a story about how that came about?
I hope I can do it without crying. I get emotional. But after taking several meetings supporting this NA H&I endeavor at this penitentiary for a couple of years, I had seen it once before in Texas. My friend that I told you about, the H&I chair, Debbie Sullivan, she's no longer with us, she had gotten buddied up with a counselor at TDC, Texas Department of Corrections. And 1 year, they were able to bring a speaker out from the prison to the NA convention. And it was definitely through her endeavors as H&I chair. So I saw that 25 years ago, maybe 28 years ago. And I had this idea in my head that wouldn't it be wonderful to bring an inmate to our convention to be a speaker at a keynote speaker slot. So I approached Charles King. I said, hey, what do you think about bringing an inmate out to speak at a convention? And Charles immediately shot me down and said, Jimmy, there's no way. It's too dangerous. There's too much risk. He said, it's just, we can't do it. The security is not there. We just can't do it. And I left it alone. But I kept thinking in the back of my head, that inmate come out and saw what we saw what we do, felt what we feel, and he could go back behind those walls and tell a better message than I could ever tell. And when he told his buddies, guess what they're doing out there? You should see what they're doing out there. So I let it lay. Charles told me no. I accepted no for about a year. He didn't know, but I knew I was going to redress this one. I'm like, I really don't want to take no for an answer unless it's a real no. That was just the first no. It wasn't a real no. Charles had no idea how I used to have to beg for funds. So I know about begging for funds. So I let it lay for about a year. I went back into this quarterly, State Department of Addictions quarterly meeting. And I said, hey, remember when I talked to you about bringing that inmate out? I said, what do you think about bringing an inmate out? I said, the impact would be phenomenal when he went back behind the walls. And Charles told me no again. He said, no, Jimmy, the security is just, we just can't do it. It's just too risky. And I let it lay again for a little while. And then sometime in 2006, I went back in there and I said, okay, guys, this is my last time. If you tell me no, I'm going to shut up. But I said, the convention in 2007 is going to be in Albuquerque, New Mexico. What do you think about bringing an inmate out and as a guest speaker at our convention? And Charles King looked at me and he says, Jimmy, we'll do it. And I look at Charles and I say, you're shitting me. And he said, no, we'll do it. And then the journey began. And he said, well, you can't pull him from the level two. You have to go to the level one, which is a complete separate facility with a lower security risk. And I said, well, Charles, we don't have a presence at level one. And he says, Jimmy, you can't do level two. You got to do level one. And I said, Charles, can you get me an impromptu NA meeting? I'm going to level one. And we did. And at that time, Ron, we couldn't decide on the first meeting in there. And we said, I called the prison back and said, you know what? I need another impromptu meeting. I said, in 2 weeks, can we go back over there? And they said, yeah, you can go back over there. So we go back in, the inmates are there. And now evidently somebody has told these boys what we were doing, because these guys started chanting, they started slogans, they started quoting, we knew that they knew what we were doing. And we picked our first speaker, and he was wonderful. And something else was born out of that. The guys came up and said, man, we really like these NA meetings. Will you come back? And I said, yes. And an NA meeting was born, and it's still going today. Wow. Twice a month, first and third Wednesday of every month, we go down there, and those boys said, man, we want you. And I said, okay. So several things happened that day, and it's been a one miracle after the other one, Ron.
The first year, did you only get one inmate out?
Correct. I was gonna go into that. At the time, we had the day of the meeting is called Behind the Walls and Beyond. And so I just kind of dreamt this up, and I told the committee, I said, guys, what we need is we need a guy from behind the walls to come out that says, hey, I found NA behind the walls. And then they're going to share the first half. And then we have somebody that's already out of the prison. They're going to be the beyond the walls. So we just brought one inmate out from the prison, and then we got somebody in our fellowship that had done time that was staying clean. So we had Behind the Walls and Beyond, and we kept it like that for like 2 years. This is a funny little story. And so in every year I go back in there, I say, hey, here's the convention, we need another speaker, and they'd send another speaker out. And then the next year I'd say, hey, we need another speaker. And then this deputy warden tells me, he says, look, Jimmy, why are we just sending one? He said, why don't we send four? And I told him, I said, you're kidding me. He said, no, I can send four as easy as I can send one. And so it changed again. And I said, you're shitting me. And he said, no, I'm not. So we got four inmates. And then it's been that way ever since. We have the four inmates. They split it up. They get 15, 20 minutes apiece. And I tell them, guys, please don't write anything down. Just speak from your gut. Just speak from your heart. Tell them what it's like to be locked up, and tell them what it's like to find NA in a prison, and where you're at in your program. And so now we have four inmates that tell their story. That's the behind the walls part of it. Now the beyond are inmates that get up and read our readings, just, you know, who is an addict. And they read it, and then they talk about staying clean on the outside. So we still have the behind the walls and beyond, but it's changed a little bit through this whole process.
Yeah, I've seen it. It was the first time I had seen that procedure where inmates came out to a meeting, and it's a packed meeting. It was a very powerful portion of the convention. It was very well done. Jimmy, what's the profile? I've heard you use now level one, level two. I'm not familiar with New Mexico, but in Pennsylvania, we have level one through five in our state correctional facilities.
Level one is where they've earned the right to be, they can be trusted. Even when they come out for the convention, they're escorted by a correction officer. And they're in orange. They wear oranges. And then we're allowed to give them T-shirts. I kind of had to argue with the CEO, with the deputy warden about this. He wanted them to be easily identified. And I said, well, I understand that. But I said, we don't want to shame them around their peers. I said, how about if they wear orange and then let me give them a T-shirt to wear from the convention T-shirt? And he met me halfway. He said, okay, they can do that. They can wear the oranges during the travel. When they get to the convention, they have to leave their orange pants on, but they can wear a convention T-shirt. So, but they still got to come from the level one.
We had Junior here from Brazil one time, and came time to take his picture with all the guys. He happened to be wearing a orange and white striped shirt that day. he was the one who looked like the inmate.
Jimmy, I have you had the experience now of running into to fellows that you had taken out or fellows that you got to know through your level one or level two experience who are now living in the community and involved in the program?
Absolutely. We have a gentleman. He wasn't one of our speakers that was at the level one. And 5 years ago, he got out. He got connected to Narcotics Anonymous through our H&I endeavors.
That's Fermin, right?
That is Fermin, yes.
Yeah. I was going to say, Fermin, within the last year, got off
jails, institutions, and death. All right. Well, Jimmy gave me a minute to say something, so here he goes. I'm an alumni from the facility that these gentlemen are coming from. I've been out 6 years and completed my parole and probation with no violations. Today I have 94 months and 18 days clean. I owe the life I have today to NA, and I'm grateful, you know, because I'm a product of H&I. Today, I'm the H&I chair here in Albuquerque. That's my passion. Thank you.
Let me clarify on the what you said about the readers. The people doing the reading are people who were former inmates who are now out, and they get up and do the reading, and then they speak for a minute or two.
Stay clean. Right. I'm an addict. My name's Jerry. I, too, have only been given a minute. So I relapsed after a few years clean in 2009 and went back to the penitentiary for the third time. I got clean in 2010. I discharged 2011, completed parole in 2013, and I think this year, yeah, I just picked up 5 years clean. I was able to get clean because of hospitals and institutions. Jimmy, Robert B., Steve, Odile, Bobby, a whole bunch of guys I remember just coming through and just talking about stuff, you know. And I've got a good life today, man. I got a happy family at home. I got a great job. I went to college for a little while, you know, and you know, I met my sponsor here 3 years ago. This is the third year in a row that I've been up here doing this. And, you know, my life is good. I don't have to use no matter what. So that's all I got. Thank you.
That's what we did last year. This thing continues to change a little bit. Now, this year, we're throwing a little different caveat in there because three of the speakers from the behind the walls last year are now out. So they were our guest speakers last year. This year, they're going to be our readers, and okay, they're going to come up and talk about how last year I was in the prison, and this year I'm out of the prison. So we're pretty excited about that.
That's just great. One of the guys I remember, I think the one, this guy spoke twice, but the one that I don't have the recording of right now is when he got up there and he said he had been to NA before he ended up in prison. So he'd gone to some meetings, and he had said he had a conversation with his sponsor where he realized, I'll do anything to stay clean. If you tell me to go stand in the corner on my head, I'll go stand on my head in the corner to stay clean. I said, well, now I'm in prison, and one of the things that I do for my spiritual life is I do yoga. So damned if I'm not standing in the corner on my head to stay clean.
I remember that so well.
All right, guys, we're right on time. I'm going to introduce our first guest speaker tonight, Daniel R. Come on up, Daniel. Get up here, brother. This is you right there.
You're a miracle. You're a fucking miracle.
Wow. Good afternoon. My name is Daniel. I'm an addict. So really first, I just wanted to express my gratitude to the NA program for bringing us out here. You know, it's an honor to be here. I was telling someone earlier this morning, you know, that there's not kindness like this in prison. There is kindness, but there's always that wall that's up, you know. So to be able to come here and experience this is mind-blowing, to be able to come out here and do that. For the last couple of years, I've been telling anybody that'll listen, but Josh especially, that there really are people out here that don't have to do drugs anymore, and they live life happy, joyous, and free. And so I'm so happy that he gets to come out and see that I'm telling the truth about that. To places I had no idea where it was going to take me, some dark, dark, and painful places. You know, I would get a life put together, start using, it would fall apart. You know, I'd had a couple kids, I was married, that fell apart. I was a failed father, a failed son, failed brother, failed everything. And, you know, I'd never really understood what it meant to admit that I was powerless over my addiction. Well, I thought that meant that I had to use drugs the rest of my life. To admit that my life was unmanageable, I didn't know how to do that. And it wasn't until it was just so blatantly obvious that my life was unmanageable because, you know, I'm in prison or I'm in jail facing 20 years and all this wreckage has built up. And so I'm looking at these things like You know, I haven't had a driver's license in 8 years. I owe every cell phone company money. I'm scratching my head thinking, you know, I think my life might be unmanageable. You know, I'm thinking it is. It might be. But, you know, thank God I was finally able to admit, yeah, you know what? I'm powerless over my addiction, because when I use, my life goes to shit. And when I admitted that, you know, things started happening. Something happened in my mind. I had been going to meetings in the county jail, but I had not been listening. It was like my opportunity to vent my anger and feel sorry for myself. And after admitting my powerlessness and unmanageability, I decided I should probably start listening at these meetings. And what really stuck out to me, other than just the kindness of these people, the way they treated me, was they were telling me that I did not have to continue on as the drug addict I had always been. They told me that change was possible. Not only that change was possible, they told me that I could change. And I decided to go ahead and believe them, that it was possible. And looking back at that, I realize that I had come to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity.
Thank you.
So I started working a program. There was a shift in my mind. I had still been really focused on my case. Things like, why are these people lying? These people involved in my case are lying. My attorney sucks. And what the volunteers pointed out to me was that, you know, maybe I should change my focus. Maybe I should focus on something else, like developing a plan of recovery, so that when I did get out of prison or jail, whatever, I would never have to go through what I was going through again. And if I did go to prison, I would be mentally sound enough to handle it and come out the other side. They also talked about finding freedom on the inside. And being that I couldn't go anywhere, this sounded pretty good to me. Another reason it made so much sense to me is I've been going through methadone withdrawal, heroin withdrawal in the county, and I couldn't sleep. And I'd wake up at 3 a.m, and my case would run through my head. I'd think about my past, the future, and just, you know, I was going crazy. I was driving myself crazy. And so instead of doing that, every morning I'd get up and I started sitting. And I did that every day. And I continued to go to meetings and I continued to listen. But the one thing getting up every morning and sitting by myself really helped me to start wrapping my mind around was living one day at a time, you know. And I started focusing on the right things, like accepting the things that I couldn't change and having the courage to change the things that I could. And one day at a time, slowly, slowly, things started changing with me. And I'm so thankful that I did find recovery in county jail. I was able to carry it with me into prison. And so I've had it this whole time in prison. I've been incarcerated 3 years now, almost 4. And I have 3 years clean now. And it definitely, staying clean in prison, being in recovery in prison, is definitely an interesting experience. I was going to talk a little bit about prison, but my mom told me that if I don't have anything nice to say, to not say anything at all. But, you know, definitely hasn't been easy. You know, I've missed my kids' birthdays, things like that. My son's graduating high school, I'm turning 18. And, you know, missing these things breaks my heart. It breaks my heart. But today, I can just let it break my heart. I no longer have to run from the pain of my life. I can just experience it. And And I wouldn't have been able to experience that if it wasn't for H&I workers, if it wasn't for the people that were going into that county jail. I wouldn't have what I have today. And so the H&I workers, I want you to know how much I appreciate you and how important your work is. For the newcomers that are here, I want you to know that it doesn't matter how difficult your life may seem. It doesn't matter what your challenges are. There is always hope. I promise you that. There is a solution. You know, I've been living in prison now for years, and I feel freer than I've ever felt in my life. And again, I think that's all I have. So, thank you, guys.
He's one of the gentlemen that are no longer incarcerated. Is very excited about coming back to our convention and be one of the readers that talks about he's no longer having to wear orange every day, and he gets to go to meetings. And so we're really, really honored to have that. I'll tell you an interesting story real quick. So I'm at the level two, and we're talking about recovery, and this older gentleman, I'm talking 70 years old. He's an old Chicano from East LA, and you know, he talked like that, he walked like that, he had a cane, and you could tell he was the patron, he was the boss. He was. And he told me, he said, "Jimmy, you have a minute. I want to talk to you." And I said, "Yes." He said, "Jimmy," he says, I get the part about powerlessness. He said, "I'm a heroin addict. I understand about powerlessness." Now, he's dressed in orange, and he don't have any pockets. And his next breath, he said, "But I don't get the unmanageability part that you're talking about." And you know, and I wanted to bang him over the head and tell him you're in the prison and da-da-da-da. And I just thought, wow. He'll see it when he's supposed to, but he couldn't get the unmanageability, and he was locked up in a penitentiary. I thought I'd throw that out there. I thought that was funny.
Yeah, I can certainly relate. Not having been locked up in a penitentiary, I can certainly relate to. I don't see what you mean by unmanageability.
Our next guest is Barry O. Barry O, come up here, brother.
Hi, my name's Barry. I'm an addict. And I love you guys, too. I love you guys. It's good to be home. I mean this in two ways, of course. This is my hometown. I'm from Albuquerque. I was born and raised here. And I haven't been here for 2.5 years. So it's overwhelming to be home right now and to be surrounded by you guys. This is where my whole journey with using and recovery took place. This is where I found recovery. And that brings me to my next point. It's good to be home in the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. Yeah, it's just amazing to be surrounded by you guys, and thanks for all the love you've given me today. And I can't wait to get out and join you guys again. About 5 years ago, I was with a good friend of mine that I'd known for years, a really good guy, and he overdosed. And I called the ambulance, gave him mouth to mouth, trying to resuscitate him. The cops showed up, the ambulance showed up, they tried to bring him back, and they couldn't bring him back, and I went to jail on warrants. So in jail, I was pretty traumatized over having lost my friend, and it was just a shock, you know. It was really hard, and I just felt like, why did I survive, you know, like what? There could have been me. And why did we have to lose him? But I found some willingness to start working on myself. I started working out, doing some classes, whatever was available in the jail, whatever. And I ended up getting out after about 6 months and got into recovery and trying to seriously work a program for the first time, but I just wasn't ready. And I ended up relapsing again. And the real bottom came exactly a year later to the date after my friend overdosed. I was on the same street, the same time of night, a year later to the date, and I overdosed on the same drugs. And luckily, the people I was with carried me to the car, drove me to the ER, which was luckily just right across the street, and I came to laying on the cold, hard concrete in front of the emergency room with emergency personnel around me. It was wintertime, it was cold, and there was people all around me, and I could see out of the corner of my eye a friend that I was with, and she has since passed away too. But she was standing in terror with her hands over her mouth looking at me. They thought I was dead. And I was like, wow, man, how did this, like, what am I doing, you know? I got into the hospital room. I called my mom, and she wouldn't come see me. I'd put her through so much. I was killing her too. I was killing her. And she wouldn't come see me, and that broke my heart. I called my girlfriend at the time. She told me she hated me. That broke my heart. I'd put everybody through so much. I was alone, isolated, nowhere left to turn. I was on the run for warrants, on the streets, with serious habits, and I just had nowhere to go. That was my bottom. So this is the turning point, which is why I shared that in detail. My mom actually knew a friend of hers that was also in recovery, worked as a nurse at that hospital. She sent him to come talk to me. He 12-stepped me. He had talked to me previously about going to treatment, and I wasn't ready. Well, he caught me at a good time at my bottom, and I was ready. You know, where else am I going to go? So anyway, he sent me to Matt's to detox. He bought me a pack of smoke, sent me to Matt's, and I detoxed. But I got out before I got into the recovery program, so I had another run of about 3 weeks, which was just horrible. And then I finally got into just a month-long program, which, looking back, that probably shouldn't have been enough, but what changed at that program is I started reading the 12-step literature, and the H&I guys, this is my first real encounter with H&I, they were coming in and doing meetings. And I remember just listening to these guys, looking them in the eyes and listening to what they're saying and feeling the message with my heart, you know. And they're telling me, go to meetings, you know, go to 90 meetings in 90 days. And I was like, yeah, I'm down for that. And they're like, get a sponsor, you know. And I knew in my heart, I was like, I'm ready, you know. I'm going to get out and I'm going to do this. And so that's what I did. I got out of that program a month after going in. I got a sponsor, started working the steps. And the love that I felt is similar to how I feel today. It was overwhelming love from the fellowship. And that's how I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, was through you guys, and through specifically a lot of people in this room, actually, that really saved my ass at that point. So, you know, I was just ready to give it up. I took the third step, surrendered my life, you know, gave my life to the care of a higher power, did my inventory, shared that with my sponsor, and I'd say that was a huge turning point. Reflecting my inventory to my sponsor, I was able to see, like never before, all my defects, my fears, my selfishness, my dishonesty, my pride. I could just see it so clear. And stuff that I was so ashamed of that I finally was sharing with somebody, I realized that I wasn't so alone. I didn't have to carry that shame with me, because everything that I told him, he could relate to me. He could relate, you know. And that was a huge turning point. I wasn't alone anymore. So, I was able to ask a higher power, which I had come to know, to rid me of those defects, you know. And when I was getting started, I didn't know what that higher power was, but I did know that a loving higher power wouldn't want me to destroy myself by using drugs the way that I had. I knew that that wasn't it. And so that's where it started. But so as I moved on with my program, you know, I got into working, doing the amends and all that. And my sponsor and I had worked a lot on my legal situation, which I had charges pending. And I knew that he said, God willing, you might have to go to prison, and that might be your amends to society. And it turned out that going to prison was my amends to society. And I was facing like 20 years or whatever. I ended up getting an 8-year sentence, half of that, 4 years for 2 grams of heroin. And I was fearful about that. I was walking recovery, but I was real fearful, to be honest, about going to prison, what that experience would be like, losing my relationships, losing everything I had, and I started to feel isolated. But I remember at a specific meeting, I shared that with somebody. I said, look, man, I'm struggling. I'm going off to prison, and I'm scared. And he said, look, just pray. You know, just pray for that fear to be removed anytime that you're experiencing that. And that's what I did, and I was able to walk through that. Even though it was hard, I was able to walk through it using the tools that I learned in the program. And so I went into prison just ready to, you know, I had to turn it over. You know, I had to turn the whole situation over no matter how hard it was. I just went to prison and tried to make the best of the situation. I started working out, you know, got back in shape. Took a residential treatment program for a year, did that. I started taking college classes right away. I've now earned an associate's degree. It's just been an amazing experience. And I even got to sponsor a guy at the facility I'm at now, which was my first sponsee, and I took him through the steps and watched him grow and mature, and that was just amazing. Before he got out and moved on to the next phase of his life. So that was incredible to watch him grow. I mean, that was one of the best experiences I've had in recovery. And if I would have known that the situation would end up okay, I wouldn't have been as fearful going in. I mean, if you look at it, it didn't end up that bad. Where else can you go for a year of free treatment, 2 years of free college, and a 4-year gym membership? Come on now. Right? Right, though? No, but all jokes aside, though, the environment is rough, and there's a lot of people that aren't willing to change. And, you know, some people have reflected back to me that it's easier to stay clean or whatever where I'm at because it's a controlled environment. But that couldn't be further from the truth. It's like, yeah, you got it under control. Take the worst criminal addicts off of society, pile them on top of each other, using dirty needles and stashing drugs you know where. It's not a controlled environment like you'd think, and it's not easy to stay clean. The only reason I've been able to do it is because of what I've gained from the program, you know. That's what's carried me through the situation. And so, you know, that's what I do today, and I've been doing that every day for the past 2.5 years that I've been clean. So. So, like I said, it's great to be at this facility now where these guys come and do H&I. You know, I was at a facility for 18 months where we didn't have meetings, and I missed the fellowship so bad, and I so badly wanted to be involved with the 12 steps or to carry the message or anything, because that's what my sponsor said, we're going to prepare you to do service, and I wasn't seeing it, and I was having a hard time relating, and I was adjusting myself. But then I got transferred to a facility just down the street from home in Los Lunas where these guys come and do H&I. And I'm grateful to have that in my life, to be closer to my family, which I have good relationships with today. I'm grateful for what I have today and in my recovery. And I plan on getting out and coming back home to you guys. And I know that the fellowship's waiting for me. So. Thank you, guys. I love you guys. That's all I got. Thank you.
I was going to ask you about is we had a man here come and speak at that prison one time named Danny T, and Danny is a well-known actor, and he was in town he had a part in one of the shows that's taped and set here in Albuquerque. We've got a few, Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, and that one about the WITSEC program. I can't remember the name of it now. But so we have a little filming world here now. They call it Tamalewood. and so Danny was regularly coming to town, and he's a member with 40-ish years clean. You got the idea you'd like to have him come and speak to those guys, and tell us that story.
Yeah, actually, I didn't have the idea of Danny coming to speak. I went to the counselor and said, look, we go into this level 2 prison every Wednesday night. Those guys in that program know about NA thick and thin. I want to get in front of the general population. Those guys are the ones that need to hear about Narcotics Anonymous. These other guys already know about NA. they've done some research, and I was startled at the percentage of drug-related charges. Inmates in New Mexico that are locked up, it's 87% drug-related. So I told them, I said, listen, I'd like to get on the general population. And the counselor said, Jimmy, I don't think there's any way. There's no way. I said, she said, I don't think there's any way the deputy warden would let you do that. I said, I'd like to have a speaker jam. That's exactly what I want to do. And she said, I don't think he'll go for it. So I waited, and then I'm driving home one day, and I get a call, and it's, my name is Deputy Warden so-and-so, so-and-so. I'm at the level 2 prison, and we'd like to talk with you about this speaker jam. And I said, whoa, 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 let me pull over here. I had to pull off the, I needed to concentrate. And I said, so I pulled off to the side of the road. And I said, yes, sir. And he said, there's only one way I'll let you do that. And he said, I said, what's that? And he says, if you can get Danny T to be the guest speaker, I would consider it. And I said, well, I might be able to do that. Hmm. Because I, like you said, Ron, I'd seen him at a couple of meetings, and I knew, you know, I could find him, and I did some asking around, and sure enough, I got his phone number, and I called him up out of the blue, and told him who I was, where I was, what I wanted to do, and would he be willing to come out and be a guest speaker at an NA speaker jam in a prison. And so he tells me, well, let me see if we're filming. I said, Danny, I need a yes or a no. I said, I got to plan this. If you're willing to come out, I'll do it around your schedule. And I said, I need a yes or no. And he said, I'll do it. And so I go back to the deputy warden and say, hey, he'll do it. So now the next thing out of the deputy wardens, this is later. I said, okay, I've got the commitment. Danny's going to do it. We'll move forward with this. So the deputy warden called for a meeting in his office. So I go over there, and it's me, all these high level people at the prison. And the first thing out of the deputy warden's mouth is, we can have the speaker jam, but I don't want any felons in my prison.
Well, that rules out Danny. Him, doesn't that rule out Danny?
I look at him and I say, do you have any idea what you just did to me? I said, I'm a convicted felon. Danny's a convicted felon. I said, 50% of NA, if not more, is convicted felons. I said, if you won't budge on that, I could probably get some addicts that aren't felons, but they're few and far between. And he looks at me and he says, well, you got Danny T. I said, let's do this deal. He said, okay, let's do this deal. So he allowed it. And I think, Ron, you were part of that. And yeah.
There was a little gathering over your house, and Danny was very gracious and met everyone, and it was really a lot of fun. But I guess in this case, hearing you tell the story, it's a matter of being able to kind of leverage something outside of our control. We have a member who they have an interest in hearing from, and we have an interest in getting the message in to that general population, and it just worked out. So he actually spoke to the whole population of the prison.
He did, and it was a total conglomerate, you know, it was a win-win. It was a win-win on both sides. They got what they wanted. We got what we wanted. It was a wonderful event. And, you know, Ron, it's back to what I've said before. I don't think we're lucky. I just think it's because we, our presence and our commitment and our dedication to this deal, somehow they sense that, and somehow they respect that. And when we're sure of ourselves and we say, well, this is what I'd like to do and this is how I want to do it, they tend to respond, you know, and we're not trying to market them hard. The marketing's already over with. Going out there every single week and suiting up and showing up, come rain or shine, I think they see that. I think that has opened the doors for us to be effective in asking for other things besides just the NA meeting, so besides the H&I meeting. And I'm going to continue to do that at this prison, because that's where my heart's at. And I believe that we're saving people out there. I believe we're getting the message. We're getting the message across.
Well, yeah. I think we're all the way there. You're doing some phenomenal work, Jimmy, and it's fun to watch, and it's fun to watch your spirit kind of soar as you do it. And I appreciate knowing you, and I appreciate the work that you do.
Ron, thank you so much. I'm honored. First of all, I'm honored to be a service for Narcotics Anonymous at the prison. I could never, ever, ever pay back what NA has given me. And it's an honor to be a guest on this podcast. Thank you both very much. Dave, I'm going to ask Ron for your phone number. I hope that's okay.
Oh, absolutely. I look forward to getting to know you. And again, I've seen your work in action, and it's a wonderful thing to behold.
People with the disease of addiction who must abstain from all drugs in order to recover. My name's Don. I'm an addict. I have a special connection with these guys sitting over here. In 2013, I was involved in the same program that they're in right now. I was released from the same facility that they were in January of 2014. My clean date is 10-7-10. The fellowship has just been a lifesaver to me. It's helped keep me clean and keep me on track. And, you know, if I can do it, anybody can do it, because I'm nobody. I'm just an addict who found a way to stay clean. So thank you for letting me share, and I'll keep coming back.